Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week, we'll talk about the big debate between Bill Cole and Jim Justice. Did it change anything? And we also have a special guest star today. I'll let Lori talk about that. But joining me, as always, is Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee and Lori Lynn, a conservative columnist and lawyer. Hey, guys.
Hey, Scott.
Who's our guest?
I have here with me my son, Charlie. He's 8 months old, and he will be providing sound effects today for our podcast. Hopefully not too many, but if you hear some squawking in the background, that's his contribution today.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks for listening. Officially our youngest listener, I bet.
Is he a friend of West Virginia Public Broadcasting?
Well, his family is.
Through his parents, yeah.
All right. And so let's start with this debate. Bill Cole, Jim Justice, they faced off in the last televised debate. Lots of interesting things came up. Let's start with $15 million in unpaid fines. NPR did an investigation that found that Jim Justice had $15 million in unpaid taxes and fines. It came up in the debate, Lori Lynn. Do you think it will make any difference first? And then secondly, how do you think Jim Justice answered it?
It did come up in the debate. I thought it wasn't as salient in the debate as maybe I had expected it to be. I don't think Cole capitalized on it as well as he maybe could have. And I should say here that I am a volunteer contributor to the Cole campaign and I've contributed money. I'm a Cole supporter. So, you know, just to be clear about that. Yeah, I mean, Hoppe Kirschbaum asked the question and then Justice kind of deflected and said what he always says, which is, well, I've never declared bankruptcy, and kind of gave his standard answer.
Well, this is what he said.
Now, you have disputes, you have issues, you have payment plans, you work through it, but I'll tell you what I won't do. I didn't declare bankruptcy, did I? You saw every great coal company in the world belly up. They stiffed everybody.
Is that an effective argument, Lori?
No, in a word, it's not. And, you know, and what didn't get mentioned was what I thought was really the most stunning part of the investigation, which was the charities piece, which was, you know, he had promised $10 million to the Cleveland Clinic, and not just promise, but a news event, a big announcement, a picture of him shaking the guy's hand. And 5 years later, the Cleveland Clinic hasn't received a penny. And then a similar story with the Boy Scouts. I think he promised $25 million and he's only given five. You know, that, for me, that was when it went from, okay, this guy's just kind of got some not so great business practices with regard to paying his taxes to, you know, what is up with this guy? That I think, is significant. And that really did not get play in the debate.
Rick, you listened to the debate?
Yeah, actually, Lori made me. She told me that if I was going to be on the program talking about it, I actually have to listen to the whole thing. So I ruined a nice evening with my wife. She's from Vermont. She was horrified. thanks a lot, Lori.
And now your blood pressure's through the roof.
Well, at least on the fines, I think that's something that's not new. And the taxes, that's a story that's been out for a while. I mean, I remember seeing that maybe a year or so ago. Or I don't know,
It's a difference in magnitude, not kind, right?
Although I do think he had a good point, like, would you rather a company go bankrupt or, you know, struggle through and try to get back on track? I think I would be charitably disposed on that point. And I see that my friend Charlie agrees with me on that.
Or disagrees.
That could be true. We need a translator.
So both of them were asked about the fact that the state seems to be spending more money than is coming in because of the economic crisis here. Lori, did either one of these guys have a good answer to the question what they would do?
Well, I think Cole was a little bit more specific. In a debate, it's always hard to be super specific. You know, you're never going to sit there and outline your 10-point plan with numbers. And but Cole, at least, I think, gave a general outline. And one thing that I think is striking is Cole was directly asked, would you raise taxes? And he didn't rule it out. I think he said the responsible thing, which was, look, the last thing I really want to do is raise taxes. I'm a fiscal conservative, but I don't want to take anything off the table. Justice's answer is, I'm not going to raise taxes. I'm not going to cut spending. I'm going to do something weird with forestry where we're going to get credit from the EPA for the carbon dioxide
and
our
trees. And I'm going to maybe borrow $200 million?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that was at least a plan. I'm not sure it makes any sense, but it was the most specific that we've heard him be.
I do think West Virginia has a serious revenue crisis, and I will give Senate President Cole credit with saying that you need to look at the revenue side of it and coming out and saying that. I think it's interesting. Both of them talked about the need to raise teachers' pay, which I'm totally down with, but you know, how are you going to do that without, you know, without adequate revenue? And that's the kind of thing where public expenditures on education can actually help raise our overall well-being, too.
Well, Laura, you had a point to make, too, about the way that Jim Justice characterized his Democratic support in the state.
Okay, yeah. So he was asked the question, which I think is a great question, basically, are you really a Democrat? You know, what about you is progressive or, you know, attractive to a West Virginia Democrat? And he basically said, well, he did say, well, I stand with the Democrats, the good Democrats, the grounded Democrats, the conservative Democrats. So again, if you are not a conservative Democrat, what on earth are you thinking when you hear that? I'll put that to you, Rick Wilson.
Well, I have a rule that I follow in life, and that is, like, anyone to the right of me is a reactionary and anyone to the left is an idiot. So, you know, it's like Goldilocks. So no, but seriously, though, I do think my personal opinion is there's probably more hope for progress if you have a fairly centrist person occupying the governor's mansion, and then people on the outside or in the legislature can work to influence. I think if you elect someone who may be too far out there, they can be rendered ineffective, you know, by business opposition, legislative opposition, and things like that. So in terms of political realism, and I am a realist when it comes to that, I don't expect the governor to do everything I want him to do.
That Metro News, West Virginia Metro News, had a panel of voters, 12 who watched it. And I found it fascinating what their comments were. It was 7 thought that Justice won, 5 thought that Cole won. So pretty evenly balanced there. Here are the comments. Cole became angry at times. Justice's clothes didn't fit well. Justice loves West Virginia. Cole was well-dressed. So apparently those are the reactions people had to how the people looked. Just on style points, Rick, Justice has this really kind of folksy, off-the-cuff style. Do you think that's working for him?
I think it probably has helped him a bit in this. I have to admit, though, I listened to it on West Virginia Public Broadcasting, so I didn't get to see the whole costume effect. And Scott used a word which I have trouble with earlier. Is that sartorial, which is about how you dress? I don't know.
Well, I think someone, Mr. Justice, if you're listening, pro tip, sit on your coat. When you sit down like that, you know, take your suit jacket and then sit on it, and that will keep those little shoulder sort of humps from appearing.
The vampire cape look when it bunches up. Also, keep your elbows off the table. That was what my mother always taught me when I was eating. I wanted to go up there and say, just, you know, sit back, don't hunch forward.
So Rick, what's the Bible verse this week?
Well, I was thinking about the book of Amos. Lori, this is for you. Let justice roll.
Okay.
So podcast listeners, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, more on Trump, the Trump tapes, and what effect that had here in West Virginia, dividing people in the Republican Party. So if you're looking for more great information about this election in West Virginia and in all of America, I suggest you check out some of our podcasts at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Viewpoint, hosted by Ash Jamara. It's a weekly podcast released on Thursdays. It'll catch you up on all the West Virginia politics. Also, Inside Appalachia is our weekly show on the region, and it's been delving into how this election, especially the presidential race, is affecting our entire region. So, The Front Porch, Inside Appalachia, and Viewpoint, keeping you up to date on this election. Check them out on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or go to wvpublic.org. Okay, we're back. Unless you've been under a rock or hidden away, you've probably heard about the tapes involving Donald Trump, 2005 Access Hollywood tapes that had him saying some, I don't know how you describe it, guys. I mean, it's been described as lewd talk. It's been described as a sexual assault description, you know, that sort of thing. Of course, Trump and his supporters have come back and said, well, those were just words and locker room talk. Meanwhile, Bill Clinton has done much worse. So that's the fight that's been going on. We're going to talk about the West Virginia angle because over the weekend, Senator Shelley Mercapito, Republican, came out with a statement basically saying that she was offended by the remarks that Trump had on that tape and encouraging him to basically re-examine his candidacy. Lori, what do you think she's saying there?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by how quickly she came out on that. I mean, I think two things probably behind that. The first is that I suspect she is personally offended by it and thinks it's pretty awful. And, you know, you had, I think, all but one female member of the Senate coming out with a statement over the weekend condemning it in some form or another. And I think second, her name is not on the ballot this fall, and it won't be for four more years. And I think, you know, the political calculation has to be, by the time she's up for re-election, Trump will either be, you know, neutral, receded into the past, or it will actively be a bad thing that you supported him. And so I think that she doesn't really have a whole lot to lose by coming out against him, but it does put her kind of at odds with the rest of her party here in the state.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is, we've said this before, and polls bear it out, he is more popular here than almost any other state. And even, I know I haven't seen anything recently. I don't know how the Trump tapes are playing in West Virginia, but I'd imagine that Trump support's still pretty strong. And Senator Cole, for example, who's running for governor, he kind of split the difference like a lot of Republicans have. He condemned the statement by Trump, but he still supports the man, mainly for his fossil fuel policies. Rick, what's your reaction?
I imagine there would be a big amount of discomfort if you shackled yourself to this person as he continues to sort of come off the rails. And I believe unshackled is how he described himself. It's interesting that a lot of mainstream national Republicans have distanced themselves, including McCain and Paul Ryan even. I sort of credit Senator Capito for saying this is a little over the top. One thing that I think is really interesting here is several newspapers in West Virginia that lean conservative have actually said Trump is not fit to be president, including the Daily Mail and I believe the Bluefield paper.
Bluefield paper.
Beckley, maybe?
Yeah, Beckley paper, the Fairmont paper. These are just the ones I know about.
Yeah, and that echoes what's kind of gone on across the country. You have a lot of editorial pages that have not endorsed a Republican in, you know, 100 years, or not endorsed a Democrat, endorsing Hillary Clinton. I don't know if a single major-ish paper has endorsed Trump.
Isn't that just feeding into the whole anti-establishment, establishment divide here, where even, Republican establishment institutions are against Trump? But that doesn't seem to be affecting his support very much here in West Virginia. Ron Elving at NPR said voters want Trump to deliver a punch in Washington, D.C.'s face. Of course, we heard Kevin Williamson from the National Review. What was it that he said about it?
I believe the term was throbbing middle finger, which
pulsating, which may
still be waving around out there.
And so is that operative in West Virginia, no matter what comes out about Trump over the next few weeks?
I think it's like there's a political fever going on.
Lip break.
And some of it, you know, all due respect to you, Scott, but it's to the media as well. I mean, and when you talk about an editorial page not endorsing somebody, I think that's the last thing some people care about. You know, they say, well, good. That means that, you know, he's pissing off the media too, and that's exactly what we want.
No, I totally see it. And I think, what was it? The media is less respected now than almost any other institution in America, and definitely more less so than any time in modern history. I guess my question is then, there's been this divide in the Republican Party. There's been this divide between elites and non-elites in America in general. Or what happens after the election? What's this going to be like? Do things continue to get more rancorous and more divided? Or is this a fever, as Rick says, is this a fever that breaks somehow and we get to a more normal, way of relating to one another?
Or a new normal. You know, the people use the term conflict resolution a lot. I think probably the main thing that resolves conflicts is time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, assuming Hillary Clinton is the next president, there's almost always a surge in popularity of a honeymoon period for the incoming president. And it will be interesting to see if she gets that and if so, what she does with it.
Do you think the Republican Party is going to be very different after this and what it believes and stands for? Or do you think that it'll snap back to what's been the consensus ever since Reagan about what the Republican Party stands for?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I think that's the biggest question, is kind of what happens to the Trump supporters, basically, if they're accommodated or if they are essentially squelched and told, you know, you tried to change the party, it did not work, you can vote for us or you cannot vote for us, but, you know, your insurrection did not accomplish what you wanted it to accomplish.
Meanwhile, for the GEP in West Virginia, for most of them, this hasn't been a bad thing at all, this Trump phenomenon. Matter of fact, I mean, his goals align with a lot of their goals. And it seems like in West Virginia, there's not this division you're seeing in some of the other states, that Trump is working for people, even for Jim Justice, who also is embracing Trump. What's that about?
Well, I think Justice is trying to position himself to say he could deal with whoever's in there. I mean, I think that's, he's sort of splitting the difference when it comes to Trump. But I do think that constituency needs some attention, whoever wins.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, just...
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, Hillary Clinton talked about her infamous basket of deplorables who were supporting Trump for all these ist reasons, racist, sexist, all this. But then she talked about, you know, the other group of folks that were mainly economically upset. You know, people whose children are being affected by opioid addiction. You know, what
the
about
the problem is, yeah, though, a lot of that's the same people. You know, you can't just separate the two. It's there's a ton of overlap there. And I think you can't write off the racists, because
here's the way I think it's probably more productive to look at racism, not as a personal trait that some of us are innocent or guilty of, but more like a, you know, sort of this structural inequality that's kind of built into it that affects different people in different ways. I think it's more, you get a better conversation about race if you look at it that way than about pointing fingers at each other.
You know, we've had, you know, people on this show talking about race before, and I'd like to do it a lot more, because I think even you in West Virginia, it's completely possible, even more so than in other places, to not encounter people who are very different from you, to live an all white existence, basically. But the country and the world are changing in really substantial ways, and I think we need to come as a state to reckon with it. And it's not something that comes easy to us. We don't like bringing up uncomfortable topics. But I think for our children's sake, we have to be comfortable talking about these issues.
And immigration is another thing I think that is similarly not a huge issue here in the sense that we have a lot of immigration, because we don't. But it comes up, I think, like race, in kind of, it bubbles up underneath other things and is kind of part of the conversation, even without being, it's obviously a huge part of Trump's appeal.
Well, Lori brought up some interesting points about, you know, prejudice and being open to different people. And you too, Scott. I had a professor at Marshall back in the day, Norm Simpkins, who said that this is probably true of everybody. People here tended to be prejudiced in the abstract, but not in the concrete. You know, I don't think there's a lot of personal meanness here.
Yeah. I know physicians who are Muslim that work in the coal fields who feel personally warmly accepted, you know, necessary parts of their community. And yet, I think that it's very possible that they would say, well, Dr. Muhammad, that's, you know, I know Dr. Muhammad, he's fine. He's one of the good ones. But what about all those other Muslims out there? And it's not enough just to be okay with a Muslim that you happen to know personally. You have to kind of understand all of them and have a broader understanding of it. And I think that's where we've failed to educate and to think about these things more broadly.
That's where we need that bridging kind of social capital, where you get to know people who are different and not just the bonding kind where you're with the same people you've been with forever.
It would not be fair to end this conversation without talking a little bit about Bill Clinton too. Hugely popular in West Virginia, won here twice, last Democrat to win for president in West Virginia. And yet, you look back at the 90s, and Trump is bringing this stuff up again, and the women that at best he sexually harassed and are accusing him of worse. And you just look at that and say, wow, what were we thinking? You know, are you looking back at the 90s any differently now because of the Trump campaign, Lori?
That's a good question. I was just out of college when the Monica Lewinsky thing happened, and she's a little bit older than me. And what strikes me now when I think about that is how young she was. She did not seem young to me at the time because she was older, but she was 24 years old, or younger than that when it actually happened. I think she was 22, maybe. Just the exploitation of a very, very young woman, you know, a White House intern. It's pretty awful. And we know that happened. We absolutely know. You know, the Kathleen Willey, the Paula Jones, that's all you can get wrapped up in, you know, he said, she said. But we absolutely know that happened. And that speaks very poorly of him, obviously.
Yeah, there's the whole what were you thinking factor. And, like, what could an opponent do to you if you know you're living in a bubble like that? I don't know. You know, it's just really a horrible.
Do you think Bill Clinton would win in West Virginia now, Rick?
No, probably not now.
Any last words, last thoughts? Charlie, you got anything? Luckily, Charlie will have no memory of his appearance on the front porch. You can save this podcast back for him later someday. Lori Lynn, thank you for joining us as always. Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, you as well. And thank you for listening to The Front Porch. See you next week.